Hello, I am Paige Albiniak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Not So Daily Brief podcast. Today, I am super happy to be chatting with Emily and Justin Nardone, who are executive producer and creative director, respectively, at their own agency, Bella Luca. Welcome, you guys. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So I'm going to start with Justin, and why don't you just run me through what your background is as a designer and a motion graphics artist, and then talk me into how you launched Bella Luca.
I moved out to Los Angeles in 94, went to architecture school, got my bachelor's of architecture degree. And right while I was in architecture, I was realizing that I wasn't going to go into architecture, but I loved
Why? Why did you decide not to go into architecture?
Well, it was a very design-oriented school. It was called SIARC, and Southern California Institute of Architecture. And so they didn't even teach AutoCAD. So it was like really like more design oriented. So we started, you know, back then they started using 3D and a little, you know, getting into Photoshop and stuff like that. So I just got drawn to that. But I love architecture and I love, you know, just the workflow of it. And also it like taught me how to look at things visually, compositions, lighting and shading. So I really got drawn into like visual effects and motion graphics. So I got into a couple of VFX jobs when I graduated, but then I realized this was too technical. So I then immediately went into motion graphics and 3D. So I was doing a lot of After Effects and a lot of 3D. And so just was contracting back then and was working with all the big shops like Troika, Brandy School, Stardust, Trailer Park, Transistor, Logan, Ant Farm. So I was doing like show opens, broadcast packages, and then got into art direction for these companies too.
So hold on one second. Did you learn how to use all like the, not AutoCAD, but all the programs you need to know for motion graphics in architecture school, or did you sort of self-teach?
I actually self-taught. So I got a computer while I was in architecture school, and it was really tricky back then too, because now it's easy to go online. But back then you had to either know someone or you had to have access to the software, and you know, there's nothing, no tutorials.
And it was expensive and it was slow and
very expensive. And so, so I basically did my thesis in Maya, which is a 3D program, basically taught myself how to do it. And then same with After Effects. I just started picking it up. And then
when After Effects existed back then,
the Stone Ages. This is like the 2000, early 2000s.
Because I feel like desktop publishing and that all that didn't really happen till what, like the mid 90s?
Yeah. So,
So right around the time you were in school.
Yeah. And, you know, back then, like 3D programs weren't, they were on machines called Softimage, which were $200,000 plus machines. And so it was just only the big studios had them. You know, like the Pixars and DreamWorks. And there was no classes. So it was really a tricky field to get into. But I, you know, was persistent and got into it. Yeah, that was basically it. And then so I was from 2000, 2010, I was working for a lot of those, you know, boutique shops. And then I then had to go back to where I grew up in Connecticut for family reasons. And then while I was there, I didn't think I was going to be there that long, but when I was there, I was like, well, what am I going to do? So I knew someone over at ESPN that I used to work with from LA, and they realized I was back there and asked if I wanted to be an art director. So I became an art director in Bristol, Connecticut, and didn't think I was going to be there that long, but I was there till 2015. Throughout that process, it was a little frustrating because it was very corporate and wasn't from that background or used to it, but it was great learning experience because I could see, you know, I had the boutique side and the background of that, but then I could see the corporate side and how the two like were so different and how they had to relate with each other. So for me, it was a great experience, and so I learned so much throughout that time. I actually became the person that they would kind of the in-between with the vendors out in LA and bringing all the projects into ESPN Creative Services. So it was great knowing both sides of that. And so after 5 years, I decided to leave ESPN and do my own thing. And that's when I started Bella Luca.
Wait, hold on 1 second. What's the difference? Like, when you became an art director, how did that differ from what you were previously doing?
Well, before, when I was art directing in Los Angeles, I was actually doing the 3D, the design, the animation, you know, with the teams of animators and designers. When I was in ESPN, it was more of like overseeing, working with outside vendors on the creative, working, you know, I was actually pretty hands-on at ESPN because I wanted to, but there's a lot of, you know, creative directors and art directors that actually don't do any 3D or motion graphics over there. So they just work with the vendors who actually do all the work. So that was a big difference. But I was persistent and was like, no, I'm always going to be on the machines and doing it.
I think that's hard because I think this happens to a lot of people. When you move up in your career, you actually move out of what it is you actually like to do.
Yes, exactly. And that was it too. You know, like the only path I could see staying there would be becoming more of a management position.
Yeah.
That's the last thing I wanted to do.
And then when you decided to leave and start Bella Luca, which was very brave, did you also move back to LA at that time?
No, I was still back east for a little bit. And then, so it was like I was contracting, doing stuff for people that I knew out in LA and people that I knew in New York. It was like doing, you know, jobs for Arizona Iced Tea. It was doing jobs for, I was still contracting with ESPN, but as a vendor. So it was nice. And, you know, at first it was pretty scary, but then Emily and I met, and she can tell you a little bit about her best background.
And then did you start Bella Luca then in Connecticut and then you guys moved it out to LA?
Yeah, Emily, you can chime in.
Yeah, let's talk, Emily. So when did you come into the picture here?
Enters Emily. So I had just started. I had left New York. I had also just left my job because I was kind of in the same boat and wanted to do my own thing. So I had started contracting on my end too and started a marketing and strategy agency. And that's when Justin and I had met. So I was in New York. He was in Connecticut based. And we just started being like, oh, well, my clients need video work and your clients need strategy work. And so it just kind of was serendipitous that those two worked out together. And then during COVID, we decided to just move our business out to LA.
Oh, when COVID started. So in 2020. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay, crazy people. Why did you decide to do that?
Well,
Justin was always going to move back here. So.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. The plan was for me to always move back. Being back in Connecticut, I was there because my mother wasn't doing well. So I kind of, you know, she passed. And so there was actually, when she passed, there was, you know, there wasn't very much reason to be in Connecticut. And when we met, we were basically like working remotely prior to COVID. But then when COVID hit, we were like, okay, this is, we could literally be anywhere now. And so we then decided, hey, let's get out of here. Decided to move back to California. Emily didn't have huge experience with LA, and I knew it very well. So it was a big step for her to move out here, but it's been pretty fun since. So
was it hard to move in COVID? Like, was it hard to do the things you needed to do to move?
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, we drove cross country, and you know, every state that we went through was like a different
situation. I did a cross country trip during COVID and it was very strange. And we went through Vegas and it was so strange. So
oh, yeah.
I would say it was strange, but I would say it was also, I don't know, in a weird way, it was fun. Like it was like,
oh, it was great. Yeah.
It was fun. It was just weird. Like Vegas, for example, and we weren't on the Strip or anything, but it was just kind of deserted and weird and hard to get food and just, it was weird.
Well, yeah, when we moved out to when we moved here, you know, we got a Vrbo, and we were in, LA was pretty serious lockdown mode. Mm-hmm. You couldn't even you could barely pick up food places. And so, which was drastically different than some of the places that we drove through. So that was a little difficult. And also Emily's first experience in LA, we'd be driving through Venice and it'd be like empty, or Santa Monica. And I'm like, yeah, this is weird because it's not how you remember things. And so, but yeah, it's very similar. Like, it was just so quiet and it was, you know, we didn't know when things were going to pick up. So.
Yeah. Emily, how do you like LA now?
I love it. I think I got really lucky with, I would have never had an opportunity to be in this industry, in the entertainment industry. So I think I'm just loving that so much and like everyone in it and the opportunities that come with that. It's has been really, really, I don't think we would have gotten it if we didn't make the transition to move out here necessarily. So I'm really glad we did.
So Emily, when you guys decided to move out, when did you decide, okay, I'm going to join forces with Justin and we'll be Bataluca together?
I mean, it was pretty much as soon as we met each other, honestly.
That's very brave.
Our skill sets. it's worked out. But yeah, our skill sets, our mindsets are very similar, but our perspectives are very different. And so we look at the world in very different ways, but very similar, if that makes sense. And so it was just like two creatives meeting each other. And yeah, I think it was very natural that those two things came together.
Two creatives meeting each other and deciding that you should spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week with each other doing everything. Okay.
Totally normal.
Yeah, super normal. When you say you see the world similarly but differently, do you want to elaborate that on that a little bit?
Justin can speak to this too. I think I'm a lot more critical and he's, Justin, what would you say you are?
Emily's definitely more strategic and, you know, really thinks about the needs of the client and the, you know, the aspects of what they're looking for. Meanwhile, I'm the same side. I'm looking creatively, like in my head, visual, like what they're looking for. So, and then we sort of talk about each one and we're like, okay, this is her take on it. This is my take on it. And then we start looking at weaving things together and how they connect. So,
yeah, I think we're both hyper intuitive. We just look at projects from completely different perspectives, which I think makes for great storytelling. We can say, but why this and why that throughout the process. And because we are with each other 24/7, like we do that all the time. I just think it's interesting. And I really think of Justin's creative aspect as, you know, something that I don't have. And so I really look up to that.
So that's a good transition into, let's talk about then how you do work, like a project comes in and how do you guys work together through the project to sort of decide how to approach it? What's the strategy? What's the execution, et cetera? Just sort of walk me through what that looks like.
I think it depends on our client. One thing we pride ourselves on is not being a typical agency. When I was on the strictly corporate side, I would get really frustrated that agencies had a template and tried to fit you into a box. With our team at Bataluca, we explore our clients and are wide open to where that may lead. We're heavy on strategy at the start to get the story right. I also come from a tech background. So there's this quote I love. It's fixing a problem in development costs 10 times as much as fixing it in design, and 100 times as much if you're not trying to fix the problem in a product that's already been released. So upfront strategy is super important to our work and for our clients. budgets too. Obviously, you need to be agile through the process going forward, though. But we always start with the strategy, figuring out the why. What are we doing? What are we doing this for? What's the big picture and how it can stand out? What's the new story we can tell? How can we get buy-in? And then once we get that strategy down, which is a lot of my part and process, then it moves over to the creative project process where Justin does his magic. And Justin, you can.
Yeah. And then it's, you know, it's basically like throughout the strategy process and figuring out the needs of the client as it should be, and, you know, coming up with solutions and creative solutions and looking at the bigger picture, you know, why they need certain things or what's their issues that they're having, and then coming up with creative solutions to that, which a lot of times they don't even have it or think about those things. So it's kind of nice to sort of bring up ideas, whether it's new technologies that we're working with that they didn't know about, whether it's a type of video to get their point across, animations. That's when we sort of dig deep and look at the bigger picture and then figure out, you know, how we can sort of.
Yeah. And that goes back to how Justin and I work together also, is that a lot of times, like how we came to be where it made sense for us to work together was, I think we're both always looking for like, what is the bigger picture for this client and what can we do for them? So it just naturally leads to like, oh, well, we know technology and here's where we could go with this, or this could be a good storytelling moment. So even though we're just doing a marketing package, it would make sense to do a video package with it. So that's kind of where those things intertwine and overlap.
Yeah, that's a big, another reason why we sort of joined forces was, you know, she was working with clients that didn't realize, you know, oh, you can actually do video or animations. And then vice versa, I was working with clients that didn't realize we could do like strategy or, you know, sort of tech work. And so that's when we started overlapping. And then it was like, hey, you know, kind of like, let's just collaborate and join forces. So, which is nice because a lot of the clients will come to us just for one thing and then realize, oh, you can do, there's so much more you guys can do. And then it kind of creates this sort of great relationship. So,
yeah. And one thing I want to touch on too that Justin brought up earlier was where when he was getting to be at a high level at ESPN, where he was kind of getting bored and wanted to do more of the creative again. I think we're both like that as well, where we're front facing and talking to our clients every day, but we're also working on the projects as well. So I think that's something that kind of differentiates us too, is that we're talking to the client, but also creating the work and going back and forth in a very agile way with them, which actually creates a pretty quick timeline because we're not going between, you know, 8 different people.
Yeah, it's nice. Like once, because we're the ones actually doing the work. And when projects get bigger, we bring in people that we know and have worked with so we can. But we're always sort of like the people that are directly in contact with our clients, and which is great.
And we have the final touch on it.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, there's no like middle people, which is nice. And so the creation and creative is always like dead on with what we're talking about. So there's no loss of, you know, communication. Yeah. So that's one of the benefits. And we're kind of like a lean team, but we can work on larger projects. We bring people in. And if we have shoots we have to work on, we have groups of people that we work and trust to do shoots. And, you know, I also have a background in video as well, so I know how to work with cameras, and also so I can relay that stuff and be able to communicate what we're doing, as opposed to just sending a group off to shoot something, which is really nice too. For doing anything video wise, we'll shoot it, I'll bring it in, and then I'm actually the one doing all the editing or bringing it into After Effects or doing whatever we need. So it's really nice to have like total control of that.
Do you find that the clients that come to you, do they have a sense of how they want the project to be produced? By meaning, like, do they know, okay, I want this in live action, or I know I want an animation package? Or do you find that they just are like, here's my goal, or here's, I want a thing to promote a thing. And then you guys come in and say, okay, actually, I mean, how much do you end up sort of shaping what the ask is? Or do they come in with a really specific ask typically?
It goes both ways. Certain things, like depending on the sports stuff, if we're doing a bunch of sports designs and graphics and animations, it's pretty like, hey, come up with something super creative, but we really want 3D here. Or if it's something like a show open, they're like, this is the idea we want. We don't know if we want to do it like live action. We don't know if we want it like 3D, or if we want it all just, you know, editorial. So that's when we come up with solutions and say, basically do like storyboards for some options and different styles. And then they're like, oh, this is cool. So that's, it goes hand in hand both ways sometimes. Sometimes they're super specific. We don't want this 2D. We want it 3D. We want it really like X, Y, and Z, make it look cool. And then there's other things where it's like, yeah, we're trying to tell this story. We don't know how to tell it. And so that's when we come up with different solutions. So it's definitely depending on the client and who we're working with is always different. But so kind of is always fun too. It keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, and I think something that differentiates Belluc a little bit from other agencies out here in LA, we definitely love working with networks, and we also work with corporations. So I think that there's a big difference between a network coming to you and saying, hey, we need to do this open, and here's your parameters. So obviously we follow those parameters for that. But with corporate, I think it tends to lean a little bit differently, where they say, hey, here's our goal. Here's what the board needs. Can you help us tell a story? And so then it's a whole brand package you're kind of putting together for them. So those tend to be a little different. And then I would also say, Justin, you can talk to this too, but with the networks, while we love doing that pitch, one of our goals as a network is to really be a partner, so that we can get in there and start telling a bigger story. So, you know, we did a pilot for a network, and from that, we ended up doing a bunch of the technology that was going to be on the full show. And then we started doing the next show after that. So we really like to get in there and work with every single one of our clients as a partner. That's really our goal, not just the one-offs.
When you say technology in that context, what do you mean?
Justin, do you want to talk about what you had worked on
for the show?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so well, there's a few things. When technology is also like, when we talk about that, it's, Emily comes from a tech background as well. So like back end, front end development for like website work. For the show that we did, it was a dating show where they would take like the biometrics of people that were on first dates and take like heart rate information, pupil dilation information. They had all this tech stuff. And so they're taking all this data, but they didn't know how to visually show it. So when people were watching, so we came up with solutions to take the data into After Effects and actually have it be accurate. So we were creating these like sort of biometric animations that could get triggered basically like real time. So we were trying to figure out how to do that. So, you know, one solution was we could try and do it with Unreal, and then that got a little too tricky. So then we started testing it in After Effects, and that actually worked. But then the client then wanted, and everything was changing literally on the fly, and they didn't know exactly how we could do this. So we had to always come up with solutions and ways how we could create that. And then they also wanted to have it almost be interactive with the viewer. So the viewer could get information or go to the heart rate or check different, you know, people's biometrics on the fly. So we then started figuring out how that could happen. So we were working with some developers as well to do that for the show. Normally you wouldn't go to a motion graphics production company.
That is my thought. I'm like, how did you end up with this job? This seems above your pay grade, but okay.
We first started the whole start of that was just to create a really cool show open with footage of LA, and they have this almost like this sort of biometric guy who was floating around. And so we did like kind of like tracking stuff to like pretend like a woman was walking past a guy and, you know, her pupil dilation, like you could see things tracked to her eyes. So it was kind of like a Minority Report type feel to it. So there's all this tracking. And so we did all that. And then that's when the development of the show started looking like, oh, how do we now execute this and make it actually real? So we're working with a group called Advanced Narrative at Warner Brothers for this. And they were really, like, the people that were involved were really into technology and using not just like creating shows, but creating like shows based off of, you know, information that could be used with technical stuff. So it was like a kind of like they were pioneering and trying to create their thing, and they didn't know how to do it basically creatively. So we started coming up with solutions. So it was like a long process. We were only supposed to work with them just to do the show open, but I mean, it was almost the whole year that we worked with them.
Do you find like that happens? Well, this actually takes me sort of into talk a little bit about what you guys did for Promax, because I feel like that was not a similar thing from a technology point of view, but like you came in for one thing and you ended up doing many other things. So is that something that happens often?
Yeah. And I think that's what we thrive on. Like we want.
Okay, that's good that you thrive on it instead of being annoyed by it.
We in almost every single client, I think I could put on 3 fingers where it didn't happen, but with almost every single client, we are there for the long haul, kind of. So yeah, Promax was fun in that, yeah, we were just coming in to do the events. And then there was the ask to integrate both established members and the new members. And so we came up with this idea of connections, and especially in a time where we're coming out of COVID, it made a lot of sense. And then, yeah, as you know, that just, it kind of expanded into this whole narrative. And then we got super excited when India and Asia also wanted to harness into that, because what we were trying to do was connections and saying that you can have similarities. So our look and our whole vibe was one thing and holistic, but then to acknowledge that different regions could also be different from each other. And I just think during this time, that's so important that everything can be holistic. We can all be one, but we can also be different and appreciate those things. So when India and Asia also wanted to start using our work, we were really excited about that.
Yeah, but to go back on, we started doing one thing. We were just basically supposed to do some designs and a video at the end. And it just turned into like, hey, you know, we can help you with this. It was supposed to be in person too. We were designing like interiors for,
yeah, like the, know, stage for the walls. Stuff, right?
Yeah. And like, what can we put on this door, or what can we do down this hallway? And then even our graphics that were in the beginning static, you know, we came up with solutions like, hey, we can create like almost like loopable GIFs with some of the stuff, so you could throw them in the newsletters and the emails. And they were like super excited. So then we started doing all that. And yeah, like Emily was saying, then it turned into a much bigger need. And
yeah, it ended up being globally, that's not a word, globally applied. Yeah. And then incorporate, you know, and then you incorporated that global feel into the whole package.
Yeah.
And it's interesting too, like what you're talking about with the biometrics and then the tech and how, Justin, you've sort of always been into the tech. How have you found in the past couple of years? I mean, the industry is obviously, tech is dramatically changing the industry, but in different ways than in on the creative side. But how are you guys finding that the advancement of tech has changed what you do and how you work?
For us, it's been great. You know, it's you know, even with like AI, you know, a lot of people are on the fence with it and its usage and how quickly it's getting developed. But we use it as like almost like a tool, like any one of our tools that we use. It's like coming up with certain ideas, and in the end, you're still gonna have to create and animate things and bring them into 3D and, you know, make things happen. Yeah, you know, at some point it will advance to that. But even if when it does, you're still gonna have to come up with ideas and solutions. It's not like you can just whip out something super cool creatively from an AI software and then have it make sense and have it exactly what the client needs. So it's like, for us, we use it just to maybe spark some ideas and to come up with things that maybe we didn't think about or that we were trying to think about, but visually, you know, we could shape it differently. To me, and also like there's the software, AI software has been around for years. I mean, it's been in Premiere for over 10 years, you know, in DaVinci, like it has like tracking information where you can do rotoscoping and, you know, paint things out. That's been happening for a long time and people have been using that. And now Photoshop with Firefly and all those like tools that took so long to do, you know, paint things out now can be quickly and create some ideas and spark more creative solutions. So it's, for us, we find it as like a, just some more tools that we can benefit from.
Yeah, it's interesting how this is what I've heard from a lot of creatives about AI. And then it's interesting how like some people view it as such a threat. And I don't know, maybe that will play out at some point, but I wonder if it'll, I don't know. I think it's like what we don't expect is more of the issue than what we're worried about. But Emily, do you use, like, I, as a writer myself, I've messed around a little bit with some of it, but you know, I feel like it doesn't work as well for writers as it does for visualizing. I've kind of used both, but for writing, it's all very basic. And I'm like, this is not helpful to me.
Yeah, I think here's my take on AI, where we are right now, and who knows where it's going to go, like you said. But to Justin's point, I think ideation is a really good part of it. So if you're going to write, I think you already need to know what you're going to say and where it needs to go. And so if you can put that in and get more ideation off of it, but you still need to know what your end result needs to be. And I'd be interested to hear what you think about that as well. And then the other thing I think about AI is, I just think at the end of the day, and maybe I'm too optimistic, but I think at the end of the day, people still do want human connections. And it goes back to our ProMax thing. Like, I think that that's what people need. I think we saw that during COVID when we couldn't be together. I think that's what people need, and they want human stories. There's just a part of AI right now where it can't tell human stories. It can only tell refurbished stories or repurposed stories that, you know, it has an algorithm to produce. I think that humanity part of it is missing. And again, I don't know what will happen come one year, but that's what I feel from that. And like telling stories and using it for like content creation, I just think that there to even input what you need to get out of it, you have to, as a human, know exactly what you want to get out of it. And I'd be interested in your thoughts on that.
No, I mean, I agree. Like, by the time you know that, you might as well just write it yourself.
But, right.
I mean, at this point, it doesn't have a personality. So if right. you have any kind of personality you're imbuing, it's not helpful. But I do, from a visualization point of view, I do think it's interesting. And there's been some ways for me as a person who is not a designer, but sometimes needs to add a background or something. I've been like, this is awesome because I can do it myself and I don't need to like find a designer, or I can just make a picture look better, you know, so that's very helpful. But the other thing I was going to say, I think what my husband says is the same thing, Justin, which is that there's been AI in these tools for a while, you know, like in terms of backgrounds or adding things. And then, you know, in VFX, a lot of that is that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So,
I think we're going to get into a copywriting or, you know, some legal stuff pretty quickly too. So we'll see what happens there.
No, I think that's where we're at. And I mean, I think the strikes have certainly highlighted those problems. Yeah. Okay, last question, and sometimes this is hard to answer because they're in the works and you can't talk about them yet, but are there any cool projects that we haven't mentioned yet that you've either recently worked on that you have coming up that you want to talk about?
Yeah, so right now we're doing all the, we work with a group in Washington, D.C., and they do all of their sports, you know, graphics, packages. They just... It's called Monumental Sports, and they acquired NBC Sports Washington. And so we are doing a show open with a woman who used to work at ESPN. It's kind of like a E60 type show, like documentary. And she's the host of it. So we're doing the whole package for that, like the show open, all the on-air stuff, which is pretty cool. And again, this was some people that I used to work with at ESPN. So it's small industry in the sports world. Kind of everybody knows everybody. We're also doing all the Washington Wizards for like graphics too. So they have all these, they're called Media Days, and they bring in all the athletes, and they have these massive LED walls. They're almost like there's like five walls, and the players can walk down them. So we did all the visuals for the stuff that's on the walls. So they have a huge camera jib, and they can, you know, shoot up, down, go across. And so we're doing all that now. So that's always fun. And then we do all the NHL stuff for them too. So the Washington Capitals as well. So that's, I always like that. I'm a sports guy, and it's fun doing that kind of stuff. And then we also are just starting a show open. We can't really talk too much about it, but it's for FX. Again, we're sort of up in the air if it's going to be all VFX stuff, compositing, 3D mapping with green screen stuff, or just straight motion graphics, After Effects. But that should be pretty fun too.
Yeah, that's cool. I forgot to ask you guys the one question that I really wanted to know the answer to, which is, why did you name your agency Bella Luca?
When I was out in LA, right before I left, go back to Connecticut, I had two English bulldogs. One was Bella and one was Luca.
Yeah.
When they passed, it was kind of like, it was always like my password. And it was always like, you know, certain things like,
Justin just told everyone his password.
I'm sure the password's different now.
Yeah. Not that anymore. But
that's a tech guy coming at you.
And Bella, you know, so Bella is beautiful. And then Luca is bringer of light. So it's like beautiful light. So it always made a nice connection. It always meant something to me. Not just my two dogs, but the meaning of it. I just thought it was just fitting when I was trying to come up with ideas, and was like, well, love Bella Luca. So that's where it all came from.
Oh, good. I'm glad I asked. That was a good answer. All right. Well, thank you guys so much. It was great talking to you and very interesting.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. This is fun.
Thank you so much for all the work you've done for Promax. We've really appreciated it. And
we
been
had
really
so
great.
Much fun doing it. And it was so much fun working with everyone at Promax too. We had just.
Yeah. Everyone was so great to work with.
Well, and we're still using it, so it goes on and on. All right. All right. Well, awesome. Thank Have a great you. Day. Okay. Bye, guys.
See you. Bye. Bye.
That's it for this episode of the Daily Brief podcast. If you don't already, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have comments, questions, or ideas for conversations, please feel free to reach out to us at dailybrief@promax.org. And as always, thanks for listening.